Good afternoon and welcome to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy, and I am joined today by co-host and legal expert, Senior Judge Elaine Andrews. The FBI is in the national news a lot lately, yet this federal law enforcement agency has 56 field offices all around the country where the work of the FBI goes on every day, out of the spotlight, and for the most part, out of the headlines. We have one of those field offices right here in Anchorage covering the state of Alaska. So we decided, why not invite them in to learn about their work here in Alaska? A special note to listeners, we're really not here to discuss or speculate on national news stories with FBI in the headline. Those developments have little or nothing to do with FBI work in Alaska. But we are here to learn a lot of other things. How many agents work here? What challenges does Alaska present to the FBI? How do they work with the APD and the troopers or the military police? And I'm curious about this. What does it take to join the FBI? And perhaps most importantly, what disqualifies you from joining the FBI? I'm sure our listeners have questions, so we invite you to participate in our discussion today. Give us a call in Anchorage at 550-8433. Statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752. And we can even take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And now I'm going to turn it over to Elaine Andrews to introduce our guest.
Thank you, Kathleen. We're here today in the studio with Marlon Ritzman, Special Agent in Charge of the Anchorage Division of the FBI. And I usually give short shrift to introductions and we get right to the meat, but this is a fun one to do. So I'm going to take a little bit of time to introduce Mr. Ritzman. He's been named Special Agent in Charge of the Anchorage Division. Most recently, he was the Section Chief of the Transnational Organized Crime Western Hemisphere Section of the Criminal Investigative Division. We're going to ask him about that. He entered on duty with the FBI in 1990. He served as on the FBI hostage rescue team, and we're going to find out more about that. And he's held various leadership positions in the Kansas City Division and as an assistant legal attaché in Islamabad. In Pakistan. He's a certified SWAT agent and is the recipient of the FBI's Shield of Bravery for a rescue effort in a federal courthouse in 1993. So welcome, Mr. Ritzman. It's a pleasure to have you here, and we have lots of questions.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So the FBI, most citizens nodding acquaintance with the FBI is probably watching television and,
right.
and seeing the dramatic things that happen on TV every day. But we have to know that that's not really the case. And, of course, the name FBI agent sounds mysterious and exciting. But I'm sort of curious, who are FBI agents and how do you get to be an FBI agent and what does that really mean? Can you tell us something about the structure of the FBI?
Yeah, absolutely. The FBI is an extremely large organization. Most people don't realize that it employs about 35,000 people. Of those 35,000, roughly 13,000 are special agents. The rest of the workforce consists of professional support employees and analysts and other various jobs that operate in a supporting role of the agents.
So that's, I mean, only 13,000 are special agents, and then the rest of them are, I mean, everything from analysts and linguists to, I think we were talking the other day, mechanics that work on the cars or people that keep the computers going. I mean, that's all part of your workforce.
Correct. All those job skills are necessary, you know, to keep the FBI running and the mission going.
And everybody focuses on the special agent, you know, so...
Correct.
It's good to know.
Correct.
You don't have to be a special agent to work for the FBI. You could have another skill set that they need, and you could actually end up working for the FBI.
Absolutely. And that's what folks don't understand is there's a lot more out there to the FBI, a lot more professional positions that are, you know, critical needs that, you know, make what we do possible.
Mm-hmm.
And without them, we couldn't do our job.
Mm-hmm. But in talking to you folks before the program today, we learned that unlike some federal agencies who employ similar people, I mean, the kind of support staff that keeps any organization going, the FBI has some very stringent requirements in terms of background checks and education. Can you tell us a little bit about, let's just say, someone who would be a mechanic to work on an FBI vehicle, what they're required to do versus an agent. Can you give us kind of a that must be sort of a soup to nuts question, but you know, I'll let you do what you can with it.
No, absolutely. Like you said, Elaine, the unique thing about the agency is every individual, regardless of your position within the agency, you have to qualify for a top secret clearance.
No matter what you do.
Correct.
You could be in the mailroom and you've got to get a top
absolutely. Okay. Correct. Whether you are in the mailroom, whether you are an executive secretary, whether you're the mechanic, whether you're one of our intel analysts, one of our radio technicians, it just does not matter what you do. That's the most rigorous part of getting into the FBI is being able to pass a background investigation to receive a top secret clearance.
And that, you know, that would mean they go back to your, do they go back to your elementary school? Or how far back do they go checking you out?
You know, it depends on your age, depends on your past experience. It depends on if you had extensive overseas travel, if you're in the military, State Department, something like that. But it is a very extensive background. There's numerous steps to it. First of all, there's for an agent, there's a test you have to take to even, you know, get into the organization. Then after the test, there's a polygraph is administered. All employees have to take this polygraph exam. And then after that, the actual background begins where they start to contact your friends, former employees, neighbors, coworkers. All these individuals will be interviewed. You'll have a criminal check done on you. And it, most individuals, it takes about a year from
I was
the
wondering,
day they apply.
Yeah. Is it months? No, it's a year.
Yeah, it's almost a full year for everybody.
And what kinds of things would disqualify you from because there are obviously people who might be interested in working for the FBI and they think, well, I couldn't even apply. Now that you've told me that, I shouldn't even bother
people,
to apply.
Right? I mean, the FBI is hiring.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know if you're hiring in Anchorage. I don't know that for sure. But you constantly need agents and the support staff.
Correct. All over the country, you know, we're constantly recruiting, looking to build up our ranks. And here, and anybody can go to FBIjobs.gov to look to see not only what
I put that link on our website.
Okay,
by
great.
The way, so people can.
And that should be able to tell you what jobs in the local area are available, and also nationwide, what jobs are available.
Mm-hmm. So, if you are maybe say a high school sophomore saying, "Boy, this sounds interesting. I think I want to think about working for the FBI and." How do I get started? What kinds of things would, even as a sophomore in high school, might disqualify you from even applying? And then once you say you want to do this, are there job experience requirements? Maybe we could talk about, let's talk about what disqualifies you.
Okay.
Don't even bother to apply if you've got these certain things.
Right. Initially, I'll focus on the agent position. First of all, you have to be a U.S. citizen. You have to have a college degree. It doesn't matter whether it's a BS or BA. Just you have to have a four-year degree. And then minimum age is 23. For most individuals, the average age at the academy is about 29 years old. Most individuals, the Bureau is a second career. Most, you have to have 3 years of prior work experience before you can even apply. If you have a law degree, there's an opportunity to apply coming out of law school, but even that's very difficult if you don't have some prior work experience. If you have a language specialty, you can speak a foreign language fluently, and by speaking, it's speaking, reading, and writing in that language. There's a possibility with only about 2 years of work experience after college to then get into the Bureau.
Why is that work experience so important? Why do they really want that before you could even really apply?
It's just better if you have an individual who has a little bit more life experience before they take on the
job
of a special agent.
Yeah.
Well, just boss life experience, dealing with people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, as an agent, college degree, pass the background check. What about drug use?
Yeah, that's a big one. A lot of people ask us about that question. And especially here in the state of Alaska, where marijuana is legal at the state level, on the federal level, it's obviously still an illegal substance. And so our requirement is you cannot have utilized marijuana within 3 years of the time that you apply for the position. So if you have used marijuana 2 or 3 months before you applied, that will disqualify you. It has to be a 3-year period. An automatic disqualifier would be sales of narcotics. If you've ever sold marijuana while you're in high school or in college, that will just automatically disqualify you.
And what about other drugs like cocaine? If you used cocaine, does that mean you can't apply?
There's exceptions for experimental, but it's 10 years. You can't have utilized or experimented with it within a 10-year period.
Okay.
You know, I saw all this is on your website, on your FBI jobs, because it says, you know, how to apply, and you click there, and all these disqualifiers are right there. And one that surprised me related to marijuana was medical marijuana. Even
correct.
If you had medical, where you were prescribed it, same thing, 3 years.
Right. And then in talking to you earlier this week, we learned that, I mean, one would expect that drugs might come up, but the other thing that you look at is debt and credit.
Correct. There's absolutely an examination of your debt, your credit score. One of the things they're looking at is, you know, default on loans. If you've had issues with credit collectors trying to, you know, recoup a debt from you, because that all goes towards possibly making you vulnerable in the future. And we want to make sure that, you know, the individuals we hire have solid integrity, and we don't want to run the risk of them being tempted at some point if during a search warrant they're handling, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in cash.
Right, right. Interesting.
How about, it would seem like travel would be a good idea. I mean, it exposes you to the world and different kinds of people. Is that a good thing to have in your background when you apply for the FBI, or is it something you look at with question? It probably depends on where they go and how long they stay, things like that. But how do you view travel?
No, that's absolutely fine. I mean, obviously, we hire a lot from the military. So a lot of military individuals will have travel, individuals who work for other government agencies, some nonprofit agencies, and they get great experience overseas with some of these organizations. So that can do nothing but help you. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not a hindrance or a deterrent in any way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So speaking of overseas, and I you know, described your prior position as an assistant legal attaché in Islamabad, Pakistan, and most people think of the FBI as being a wholly domestic law enforcement agency, that it's not the CIA, it's the FBI, and the FBI is domestic. But obviously there's an international component to what the FBI does. And could you tell us a little bit about your position there?
No, absolutely. Yeah, domestically, the FBI, we have 56 field offices all across this country. And what a lot of people don't understand is that we do have a presence in over 60 embassies around the world. And that position is what we refer to as a legal attaché. And in some offices like London, I believe we have 6 to 7 agents working out of that office. The primary role of that individual in the overseas embassy is as a liaison or conduit with the foreign law enforcement that's in that country. In today's world, our criminal element and the crimes that are being committed are often global in nature. In other words, the person who's stealing your money may live in Nigeria, they may be living in Romania, they're not necessarily even here in the United States. So it's important for us to develop those partnerships with law enforcement in these other countries in order to get them to work on our cases, because the FBI has no jurisdiction in a foreign country. We cannot conduct an investigation in that country. We cannot arrest people in a foreign country. The job is strictly that of a liaison in order to assist and get the foreign law enforcement, you know, to work the FBI cases.
Are you kind of expected to take one of those tours of duty, or did you just want to do it?
No, those assignments are all strictly volunair. Mm-hmm. It just all depends on, you know, the different parts of the world. Some individuals will get into the LEGAT program and stay there for quite a long time during their career. They'll do 2 or 3 assignments back to back. I believe the FBI has now instituted a policy where after 2 consecutive overseas assignments, you have to come back to the States for an extended period of time before you can go back out overseas again.
And you just did it once to Pakistan?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
But it was fascinating.
It was a great assignment. I mean, you know, you learn a lot. It's fascinating to work with, you know, foreign law enforcement, you know, to sort of like the military slogan, you know, get out, travel, see the world. Mm-hmm. And it's a great opportunity that, again, a lot of people just don't realize. It's not only agents. You have to realize that in these League Ed offices, again, we need professional support to, you know, help us and help us run kind of a mini office within that embassy. So when I was stationed in Pakistan, we had four agents and we had three professional staff that assisted us in our work overseas.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm just going to remind listeners, if you've just joined in and you're hearing this and you're wondering, Pakistan, what are we talking about? We're talking about the FBI in Alaska, and we have the chief agent of the field office here, Marlon Ritzman, and I'm on with Elaine Andrews, who's my co-host on Justice Alaska. And I just you can give us a call at 550-8433. Statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752, or you can give us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. We've been talking about, you know, a little bit about, we know so little about the FBI. How do you, you know, how do you qualify to be an FBI agent, and what kinds of people work for the FBI, and you know, what are the challenges? We're going to move into sort of what are the challenges of being in the FBI in Alaska. But right. Go ahead, Elaine.
And before we do that, let me just ask another sort of, I guess it would be a structural question that you obviously served in the hostage rescue team. So it sounds like not only do you have sort of the category of agents and professionals and staff, but it sounds like even the agents themselves might operate on specialty teams or categories of groups. Can you tell us a little bit? I'm actually very curious about the hostage rescue team that you were on, but there must be other teams, and maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, the FBI, throughout our 56 field offices, there are what we call a field SWAT team located in every single office, and those SWAT teams are utilized just like a local law enforcement SWAT team for your high-risk search warrants and more high-risk arrests. With the agents, though, it is a part-time job. So they are case agents first, and they're SWAT operators second. With the FBI's hostage rescue team, it's our full-time tactical team based out of Quantico, Virginia. Once you get on that team, you'd no longer work cases. You become a national asset that is utilized all around the country, and we will go out and assist other field SWAT teams for a more difficult operation. And one of those more recent that was in the news was in Alabama several years ago, where they had a young boy taken hostage by an individual and he was held down in a bunker. HRT was called in to assist with that rescue because of some of their specialized entry techniques.
Amazing. We've got a caller, by the way.
All right.
Is it a good time for me to take a
call?
Okay. I'd like to welcome Bob from Anchorage on Hometown Alaska. Actually, Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You have a question about an unsolved case?
Yeah, well, it's actually two cold cases. It was back in 2005, and this may be before the agent's time here in Alaska, but there were two torsos found out in Cook Inlet of young females. And there was another drug sexual exploitation case that was kind of developing simultaneously. The guy was a fairly notorious businessman in town here. I won't name names or anything, but he's deceased now. But he had been brought down to APD for questioning about, you know, the drugs, and he had been doing some bad stuff. And then he dropped hints that he could give information about these two torsos that were found out in Cook Inlet. And so they brought him down to the FBI office, and then we didn't hear anything about it after that. And that was going on well over 10 years now. And I'm just wondering, how is the FBI still actively investigate cold cases like that? Because I'm sure the families of those two ladies and their friends would kind of like to know, you know, whatever happened. It seems like the cases just dropped off, and they may have involved some high-level people here, and that's why I'm kind of...
Okay. Well, I just want to say Marlon Ritzman has only been here for 2 years. He's coming on his second year anniversary, so I'm not sure. But go ahead, Marlon. What can you tell us?
You're correct. Unfortunately, I don't have any information on that specific call that the caller was referring mm-hmm. to. But the FBI will get involved with a local homicide at the request of local law enforcement. If APD or the troopers would request us to assist them for some specialty reason that we can offer, say a polygraph exam, utilization of our profilers, maybe something from FBI lab in Quantico. You know, we will absolutely provide assistance.
But it doesn't become your case.
Correct. Now, and not to get too far into the weeds, but if there is a, like in Washington, D.C., because that's a District of Columbia, it's a federal territory, we do have agents assigned to Metropolitan Police cold case squads who do exactly that, work cold case homicides, but realizing that those homicides occur within federal jurisdiction.
Okay.
Right. And one of the, it is, I think it is hard for citizens, even some of us who
have been in the legal field
for a while to really know, for example, I mean, the FBI, because it's federal, you actually have pretty direct jurisdiction or authority over things that are interstate, like airplanes and maybe railroads. And I mean, are there things that you do exclusively or you do in conjunction with the state? I mean, if someone says, well, that definitely has to be the FBI, the state can't touch it. Is there anything that's like that here?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of overlap in the criminal justice system between what is federal crime, state crime. Drugs are a great example. You know, a person can be charged either in the state with certain drug violations or we can charge them federally. Certain things like civil rights and public corruption are often strictly in the venue of the FBI. We are usually going to be the only game in town that will focus on a civil rights violation or if there's an issue with public corruption on some sort of politician.
Okay.
Let's see. I've got another caller.
Okay.
I'd like to welcome Jim from Wasilla. Hi, Jim. You're on Justice Alaska. And you, what's your question?
Well, no question, but an experience with the FBI. My brother and I fished out in the Aleutians back when they first started King Crab. It's a nine-month season. And in the summertime, when the crab were in molt, then the boat would be in Seattle for repairs. And my brother and I, we took off, and he worked on a processing ship. We'd take off and go hitchhike across the country. And in 1966, you looked rather suspicious. We were going through Salt Lake City, 3 a.m. Police pulled us over, interrogated us for about an hour and a half about who we were, what we were doing, where we were going, who we talked to, on and on and on. And it kept my brother in one vehicle, me in the other. And they finally let us go. And then I told them where we were working, what we were doing. So I got back to Ballard there in Seattle, working on the fishing boat, getting ready to come back up to Alaska. And here comes a FBI agent. And another 90 minutes of going through the same thing over and over and over. And the guy didn't look much older than me. I was 20 at the time. And, so
maybe he was a beginner.
Well, we know he had to be at least 23.
Yeah.
So anyway, I finally met up with my brother when he got to out there at ADAC, and I was on the boat. And of course, back then we didn't have phones. We didn't talk to each other for months and months and months. So when I did catch up with him, he was telling me about the FBI agents that showed up on the processing ship in Tokeland, Washington, where he was.
And you guys were very suspicious.
I'm thinking, was it worth it?
I don't know. What can you say about that? That's pretty, it's an, you know, in your life, Jim, it looms huge. I don't know what our agent can say about it. I don't know. I mean.
I don't think there's much I can
yeah.
say.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what might have triggered it, or I don't know.
Well, you got to look at the time frame, the time era. In the 60s, when you had a lot of the cultural revolt or the attitude, the hippies. I mean, we weren't exactly hippies. We weren't using drugs. Didn't want to be, you know, associated because I saw what the lifestyle was doing to people. But I liked the freedom of being able to pick and choose. And when you get locked into a culture like the hippies, you can't lose your options to pick and choose. Mm-hmm. So anyway, Fortunately, I stayed out of legal trouble for the most part.
Well, we're glad for you. And I wish we could tell you more, but that's all we can do. I've got other callers coming in, and I've got an email here that I'd like to go to. So thanks, Jim. This is Greg, and his email says Cold Bay, but I doubt that he's in Cold Bay. But he says he's asking about the antennas on the top of the FBI building. He says, where did all the antennas that used to be on the top of the FBI building downtown go? It seems to me there used to be more of them on the roof a decade ago than there are now. Any idea? That's a puzzler.
I'm sure it has to do with technology.
Sure. Things got smaller, probably.
Correct. Things are getting smaller and better.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, back to your agenda there, Elaine. What else did you want to do?
Well, I understand that I learned about this, and I think we ought to just let the folks who are listening know about it, because we're going to run out of time on the program, but there are lots of ways to learn more, and one of them is this thing called the Citizen Academy. Can you tell me something about that?
The Citizens Academy is an outreach program that the FBI sponsors, and you have to apply to be into the Citizens Academy, but it's not as rigorous as becoming an employee of the Bureau. It just allows us an opportunity to sort of screen through the applicants. And it is a program where they show up once a week for, I believe it's 8 weeks, and they spend 2 to 3 hours during that one night a week learning all about the FBI, learning about all the different programs, whether it's our counterintelligence program, violent crime program, counterterrorism program, our white-collar crime program. And it sort of helps us to, we like to say, give them a look behind the curtain to demystify what the FBI really is. And then it's just our way of partnering with the community, you know, getting our message out there that, like you said before, it's not always like you see on TV. And, you know, in reality, here's what the FBI can do, and here's what we do, you know, in your community for you. And it just allows citizens a behind-the-scenes look at the FBI.
I've got a question. Are they sitting in a classroom, or do they go visit facilities, or what's it like if you do take the academy?
No, it all takes place at our office there, and they're in a classroom, and we give them presentations. Some of it's hands-on. They're up moving around, looking at some equipment, depending on who's, you know, if it's our special agent bomb technician who's given the class that evening. They'll get an opportunity to see the robot, look at all the gear, learn how he does his job.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. And how old do you need to be? Could a high school student do it, or do you have to be 18 years old? Or
For the Citizens Academy, we target the community, adults within the community.
Okay.
But we are doing a teen academy. We just did one approximately 2 months ago, and we are going to schedule at least one, possibly two more for this fiscal year.
And why did you add a teen academy? That's interesting.
Again, just to start at a younger age, give kids, you know, a look at the FBI, look at a career in law enforcement. And, you know, if somebody's sort of struggling with, hey, what do I want to do in the future? What do I want to do with my life? This gives them a goal. Because, mm-hmm. Again, the FBI in particular, it takes you a long time. You know, you're not going to get in the Bureau right out of high school. You're usually going to be mid to late 20s. But during that time frame, we can give them ideas. Okay, what should I do for a college education, for my job following college, that's going to enable me to qualify to get into the Bureau?
Yeah, you know, not only if they want to be an agent, they're going to have a 4-year degree, things like that, how not to run afoul of the disqualifiers in their young and vibrant youth. So, yeah. Well, we're going to take a little break. We've got about a minute, and so we'll be right back. Please think about your questions. You might have questions about, I don't know, some of the roles of the FBI here, or how do they manage to cover this whole state? I mean, that's a question right there. So you're listening to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska, and I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy, your host, and I'm here with co-host Elaine Andrews. And we have Marlon Ritzman on from, he is the senior, the special agent here in the Anchorage field office. And we've first talked a lot about, you know, what does it take to be an FBI agent and what are some of the careers, which is a lot more varied than you might imagine. You might think the only thing you can be is a special agent, but actually the FBI has a lot of support people. But now we're going to sort of move into some other ideas. And one on my mind was, you know, there's 56 field offices in the U.S. We have one in Alaska. A lot of people don't even know we have one in Alaska. And then I'm thinking this state is as big as many states put together. So how does the FBI actually manage to cover Alaska? So tell us, Marlon.
It's a great question. Here in Alaska, we have 51 agents working in the state. And we have also what we call our resident agencies, or RAs. Every field office throughout the country will have these RAs. And here in the state of Alaska, we have an RA down in Juneau, where I have two agents living and working. And then we also have three agents up in Fairbanks, who they live and work in Fairbanks. So usually our agents who are in the southeast, in the Juneau area, will cover most of the southeast. The agents up in Fairbanks will cover everything up to the North Slope. It would be impossible for us to do our job here if it wasn't for our partnership with the state and local law enforcement. Whenever we travel, say, out west and we go to Nome or Kotzebue, the first thing those agents will do would be to hook up with the local police officers in those cities and or with the troopers. And then they will conduct their investigations with those individuals. Another partnership we have here in the state is with the Coast Guard. You know, we couldn't accomplish our mission, again, without the Coast Guard. A couple examples there is we've performed some search warrants out on the island of Kodiak, some arrests, and we'll utilize Coast Guard aircraft to transport our equipment and our agents out there to Kodiak. When we had the incident down in the southeast where there was a murder on a cruise ship and it came into the port of Juneau, we were able to take our evidence response team here from Anchorage, get them onto a cargo or a C-130 Coast Guard aircraft to get them to Juneau to conduct the crime scene investigation on that cruise ship. So how we accomplish our mission is through some of the great partnerships we have here in the state.
Let me throw out the phone numbers for folks. I forgot to do it when we came back. Here in Anchorage, it's 550-8433. Statewide, 1-888-353-5752. Or we'll take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. You know, just to follow up on that, that idea of partnership, I was looking at the FBI website and I saw your press information and I saw recently, this would have been a partnership with the APD. Here in Anchorage, there's lots of concern about the rise of crime. And I was interested to see that the FBI was involved in these car thefts, but with gun violations, and that there were 10 folks that were, I think it was a grand jury that brought them in. And I thought that was an interesting thing. And people might not assume that the FBI might be involved in the local crime rise that we've got here and the ways that you are. And this was one way. Is there any other ideas you can share with us about how that happens?
You're correct. A lot of that's a collaborative effort. Again, when we work with our local partners, it's always a determination of what avenue can we take to get this person off the street for the longest possible. And if we have the ability, if we have somebody who's doing a lot of car thefts and they are also violating a federal crime, say felon in possession, we will absolutely then go after them for that felon in possession, because then on the federal side, a lot of what we call our minimum mandatory sentencings will kick in. So the individual will do much more time than if they were just charged with stealing the car.
It's a heavy hammer.
Correct. And what helps us do that also is we have what we call our Safe Streets Task Force, which is a group of agents, troopers, and APD officers and Coast Guard CJIS individuals who work gangs, and they focus on some of the gang crime, the gang violence that we're facing in our city. And an interesting there note, too, is individuals who are what we call our APD task force officers or the trooper task force officers also have to undergo, once they get assigned over to the FBI, they will also be given a top secret clearance, which will include that rigorous background investigation on those individuals also.
Hmm.
Because once they get there and they're in our space, is they have complete access to all of our systems, all of our files, and, you know, they work the cases jointly with us.
Hmm. Yeah, I've got an interesting email. We talked about how you have to be 23 to get into the FBI, right? Well, I've got a caller who wants to know, what's the upper age limit for first-time FBI applicants?
No, that's a good question. The max age is 37. That's if you want to be an agent, because they will kick you out at age 57. It used to be 55, and so the oldest was 35, but you have to be able to obtain 20 years of service. So it's 37 and then 57.
Hmm.
They will kick you out. And that, again, that's something that Congress has established. I can't really give you the logic or the reason why. I'm 55. I think I could do a few more years, but according to the Bureau,
left in you.
I've only got 2 years left.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a mandatory retirement age.
There is a mandatory retirement age, right. But I need to back up a little bit. There is a caveat now for military. There's a lot of military folks that are getting waivers that are coming out of military service in their later 30s, 38, 39, even 40, 41, and they are getting waivers and able to come in as special agents. Mm-hmm. I do not know if that waiver applies to any other category right now except for the military.
So if... When the person hits a mandatory retirement age as an agent, can they then go still work for the FBI in a professional category as opposed to an agent category, or you're done?
No, absolutely. We've had a number of agents who will retire on Friday, and Monday they're back as a contractor, doing financial analysts, some sort of contract work that we need, again, in case support.
And so this email. Question, this person could still work for the FBI after the age of 37 if they were not an agent.
Correct.
So
There is no maximum age requirement on our professional support. Mm-hmm. If that person is an accountant, and let's say we want to hire them as a forensic accountant to help do some investigative work on our white-collar cases, age is a non-issue for mm-hmm. the professional support.
Okay.
So, and it looks to me like, you constantly refer to teams. I mean, there are a lot of myths about the FBI, and, maybe we should talk about those a little bit. But you talked about this evidence response team. That's something different than, obviously, the hostage rescue team. And
or a cyber team.
Or
I don't
cyber
know.
Team. Yeah. But so what's, you talked about this team going down to Juneau. Talk to me about this team. What do they do?
Correct.
It's different.
That's again. It's what we call an additional duty. It's like along the same process when you sign up to be a SWAT operator. Your primary function is that of a case officer and investigator. And when you join the evidence response team, again, it's an extra duty. Your primary job is still that of an agent. But then if we have a major crime scene, these are individuals who we'll send back to Quantico to get extra training in crime scene and evidence collection, and we'll utilize those folks then on some of our major crime scenes, like, again, a murder on a cruise ship.
Right. Okay. So you're constantly getting training, and do you have choices as an agent? In other words, if you come in as an agent and you say, boy, I want to work on a bomb squad, or I want to do cyber stuff, or I want to do chemistry-related things, can you say, I want to join this team? How does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. And everything comes with tenure. Right out of the academy, you're going to do basic agent work for a while. But then as you develop some seniority, and depending on what your background is, your degree, your prior life experience, you can start to specialize in certain areas. And that's one of the big, I think, positive recruiting things for the FBI is, I mean, they're too numerous to go, but, you could talk about being a firearms instructor, SWAT, evidence. We have special agent bomb techs. We have WMD, weapons of mass destruction. You could specialize, you could become a polygrapher. You could be a pilot agent. You could do the profiling like they see on TV. I mean, it's just, you could become a negotiator. You could become a special agent recruiter. I mean, there's just a myriad of things that you can do as you progress throughout your career.
So once you're in and you get additional training, does the FBI pay for that, or do you always go to Quantico and go to school there, or where could you go to school other places and still have it qualify for advancing in the FBI?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of training is done at Quantico, Virginia, but we also send individuals out to various universities and schools to receive additional training or additional law enforcement schools that the FBI, you know, all that's paid for because it's all part of your scope, part of your job.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the, as I understand it, if you want to become an agent, it's a little bit like the Army in the sense that you go where the FBI sends you. You have to agree that you will be, you're subject to them sending you wherever they want to send you.
Yeah, absolutely. There's three sort of categories in the Bureau, our professional staff, our analysts, and the agents. The analysts and the agents have to sign what we call mobility agreement, meaning that regardless of where you live, when you sign up and they hire you, you have to agree to go wherever the FBI sends you. So your first office out of Quantico may be New York, could be Miami, could be Little Rock, Arkansas, L.A., Boise, Idaho. It just, you know, you go where the Bureau sends you. But most of our professional staff, we will hire those locally. Wherever that those field offices are throughout the country, the majority of the staff that runs that office is hired within the local community.
So someone in Alaska who wanted to work for the FBI but wanted to stay in Alaska, they could be hired by the FBI, and they would not be subject to being sent hither and yon unless they were an agent.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
So we can assume you wanted to come to Alaska, right?
Oh, absolutely. I volunteered for this.
Okay. You know, you mentioned gangs, and it made me think of, okay, I saw the other day in the newspaper was a picture of my bank and a bank robber. They had a snapshot of him right there. And I thought, of course, the FBI is involved. But I learned talking to you that it's because they're federally insured.
Correct.
That's why the FBI is there for bank robberies. It's not because you go to every bank robbery. It's because it's FDIC insured.
Correct.
So that was interesting. And the other one was the default on student loans because the federal government is backing the student. So that's really where you get a lot of your authority is because it's the feds.
Correct. Yeah. If it involves something that the federal government sponsors or is backing, that's what gives us a jurisdiction.
Right. I was wondering about, you hear the talk of gangs all the time. You know, it's always thrown around. I don't know if anything's changed about that. Is it related to opioids or is there anything you can illuminate to us about what's going on in your partnership with the APD, I'm sure, but what's going on there?
Again, we'll focus on the gang activity with our Safe Streets Task Force because, you know, the knowledge that the local law enforcement brings to the table is something that a lot of times the FBI can't bring. So, you know, we'll partner up with some of our abilities and their local knowledge of the area, and we'll combine that and, you know, target these individuals. What the FBI does is we're not looking at necessarily the drugs they're selling. Our goal is what we call an enterprise theory of investigation. We want to dismantle the entire enterprise when we go after it. We want to go after not only the folks that are selling, but the individuals that are importing it, and even if we can reach into Mexico and who's ever actually shipping it over. You know, our goal is to try to dismantle an entire enterprise.
It goes beyond the streets.
Correct.
Beyond the streets and the gangs in the streets. I've got another question, but
sure.
I also thought other big properties here in Anchorage are the port. You know, there's all that fuel out there. There's all those ships coming in, and then there's the airport. You know, how does your jurisdiction apply there?
Well, we'll focus on what we consider critical infrastructures, and we will, you know, partner up with whoever is responsible or the ownership of these critical infrastructures just to make sure that individuals have a security plan in place, like the Alyeska pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we work with that company quite a bit, just collaborating on what we can do to ensure the safety of these critical infrastructures.
Yeah.
And again, a partnership with, you know, the troopers who are out in these locations, making sure we're always coordinating, talking, you know, we're always sharing intelligence. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the big things about the FBI is there's been a major shift over the years to where instead of just reacting to crime, we're trying to be more proactive, we're trying to be more crime preventative, and use intelligence to drive our investigation and what we're going to start looking
so
at.
So less treating the symptoms and more the cause, or sort of trying to get
deeper.
Good
example. Yep.
Yeah. So basically, you partner. You make sure the port has a good safety plan and all that. You don't. You're not responsible for it at all.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
And what's your? If I can just jump in for a minute, what's your relationship with the military? Because the military is obviously a federal, I mean, it is a, in the Anchorage area, it takes up a huge amount of land
right,
here. So
right.
how what's your interface with the military?
Again, it's a great partnership. You know, we work with the criminal investigative elements, whether it's the Army or the Air Force. We have in our office what we call our Joint Terrorism Task Force. And the Joint Terrorism Task Force, we've again deputized other federal, state, and local officers who are part of that team, and the military is a big part of that team, where we're constantly collaborating, we're constantly sharing information. And any individuals, depending on the seriousness of the crime, if somebody's on a military reservation and they commit a crime and they are not covered under the UCMJ, a soldier, they could end up going into federal court on those charges. Mm-hmm. So the partnership with the military here, both Air Force and Army side, is outstanding.
Hmm. Got a caller. I'd like to welcome Richard on to Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I'll listen off air, but I just wanted to ask for students that may be listening, what are the type of high school grades good? You know, what's the lowest that you think that, like in social studies, that the students should get?
You wouldn't be a social studies teacher, would you?
Well, as a parent, I will tell you an A would be what you'd like to see. But the high school grades are not a factor. Again, you have to have that college degree. So the issue is going to be, you know, what is your degree in, and, you know, your transcripts from college.
Right, but you wouldn't, I mean, you would want to give the caution about not doing anything that would disqualify you in your teen years, in your high school years, that might, you know, might be a problem even if you did excellent in college and wanted to apply.
Correct, right. And the issue there, again, is, you know, the drug use and not, you know, committing a crime.
Right. Staying out of serious trouble of any kind would be something that would be important, right?
Because you can't erase it, really. If you're going to work for the FBI, you can't erase it, right?
Yeah.
Some of it. I'm going to throw our numbers out one more time for listeners. 550-8433 in Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or we'll take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. I've got a question. Shall I jump? Okay. I know we talked all about, you know, you can't have smoked marijuana for three years before you apply for the FBI, and you kind of never sold it and all that kind of stuff. But we also have this distinction between the federal government and the state government over marijuana. So I just wondered, it's legal to sell, you know, have shops and all that. What do you do with something like that where the local territory is a little different than the federal law?
A lot of on those issues, we'll take guidance from the U.S. Attorney's Office. The last thing I want to do is work a case, put a lot of effort into something that if we then take it over to the U.S. Attorney's Office and present it and they decide to decline it.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Correct. If they decline it, then it's sort of been a waste of our time and effort.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've got a very good relationship there at the U.S. Attorney's Office. And if there's ever any issues or questions, you know, we will go to them because ultimately they're the ones that are going to have to prosecute the case.
Mm-hmm.
And we will take their guidance on, you know, if they're not going to prosecute it, then we're ultimately probably not going to investigate it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, I think sometimes people don't understand that the FBI is not itself a prosecuting authority. It is.
Correct.
It's an investigative
Correct.
Agency. And the attorneys, like your district attorney, is essentially the U.S. attorney. That is they're not FBI agents. They're U.S. attorneys subject to the
much like
the
APD
General.
Is to the state
to
court
the,
system.
To, yes. So APD would take their case to a state district attorney, mm-hmm. or yeah. perhaps a municipal prosecutor. But
right, and one of the differences, too, I'd like to point out there is I think the working relationship at the federal level is much different than at the state level, in that we will partner early on with an assistant United States attorney during our cases, mm-hmm. and they will be aware of and assist the agent in obtaining search warrants, other court process throughout the course of that investigation. And then once the case goes to trial as a case agent, you will actually sit at the prosecutor table with the prosecutor. You'll sit there through jury selection. You'll sit there through the entire trial up until the end through the verdict, where a lot of times on the state system, once a detective works a case, they will hand it over to the prosecutor's office, and they won't possibly do anything else until they're called to testify someday in trial.
Right. Right. I think, you know, probably the state system looks much like the federal system when you have complex, serious cases where they really need the legal team to start with, you know, with the enforcement team in order to make sure that everything goes the way it's supposed to mm-hmm. go to get to the end. But it is true. I mean, in terms of just numbers, I mean, the state takes the major, major bulk of
correct.
Of the cases. So obviously you can't have that kind of intensive partnership except in the most serious and complex of cases. So it's there's a numbers game there for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, you're correct, and you'd probably never have a detective available to work if,
right.
you know, they were there for every case mm-hmm. with the prosecution.
Right.
I've got a question. We talked a little bit about the FBI is always hiring, and it's always and, you know, it's not only just agents, but it's the support kind of staff, linguists, forensic accountants, all kinds of stuff like that. I wondered whether you're seeing a lot more women applying or what's the diversity of the FBI? How is that going?
You know, that's going well in certain areas and not well in other areas, to be very truthful with you. On our special agent side of the house, we are definitely trying to push the recruiting more of minorities, women, and other minorities. The Bureau absolutely understands that it's imperative that we sort of reflect the community that we're serving. And right now, you know, approximately 67% of your agents are white males, about 16% are white females, and roughly 5% only about 3% are African-American males, and only about 1% are African-American females.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just give you some of the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got it broken down by other groups. But
mm-hmm.
So we absolutely are encouraging anyone and everyone to apply for the job.
Mm-hmm.
On the professional support side, it's a little more evenly spread between, you know, minorities, men, women.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, the agent population over the years has been growing more and more just in the white male category, and we are trying our hardest to reverse that.
Mm-hmm. And are those numbers state numbers or national numbers?
These are national numbers.
National numbers, okay.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So I know when we're talking about getting ready for the show, we talked about the typical candidate is a justice major, maybe been a police officer, and you said that's the biggest pool you're getting, and that if you have other qualities that are helpful, like languages, that might move you to the front. I wonder, do you have any system for moving women to the front or moving, you know, minority candidates? Do they get extra points for bringing some diversity into the system?
There are the issues. You just need to set yourself apart somehow. You're right. You know, we hire a lot of lawyers. We have hire a lot of individuals who have accounting degrees. We hire heavily from prior law enforcement, prior military. We also do have a number of school teachers, psychologists who've entered the Bureau. We've got several professional athletes who've entered the Bureau. I think recently there was a gentleman from the NFL within the last year who became a special agent.
Hmm.
Often what I like to tell individuals is if you are, say, a military or law enforcement, and you have just a criminal justice degree and nothing else, you are in a prior largest category of individuals trying to get into the FBI, and you need to set yourself apart. You need to get that second degree, a master's in something. You need to speak a language, you know, and fluent in a language. Again, reading, writing, and being able to carry on a conversation in that language. Mm-hmm. You know, community service, you know, something to set yourself apart from mm-hmm. the rest of the pack. And that really applies across the board, mm-hmm. you know, regardless of who you are. You just, you know, if you have just that general degree, you've been a police officer, you've been in the military, you're going to have something extra because you're competing against
the
most individuals in
that's
that
interesting.
Background.
Yeah. You know, this is just Anchorage is about to vote, you know, and we're doing vote by mail. And voting is really a local jurisdiction issue. But there's all this discussion of the national election being somehow infiltrated. And this is not an Anchorage question, I confess. But would the FBI be involved in looking at meddling in, you know, national elections? And you probably have nothing to do with the local elections. I don't know.
Right. No, yeah, we absolutely would, you know, be involved if there are things like intimidation, if somebody's outside a polling place, you know, threatening mm-hmm. To keep certain race of individuals away from the polling place, we would absolutely investigate that. That would be a federal crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's really a local. You're called on again because it's a federal crime. You would be involved. And in terms of the national election as that's unfolding, I'm sure it has nothing to do with Anchorage. But there are probably people working on it.
Correct. If there's issues, if there's, you know, foreign meddling, we'll absolutely have individuals investigating.
Which would
that.
Be going into the cyber area, I guess. And you guys are involved in that too.
Correct.
Yeah. Let's see. What other questions do we have? I don't think I've got any coming in. We dealt with that. I've got my little list here. The linguist. I was interested in that. I before we got on the air, I was wondering, well, what do the linguists do? Are they listening or are they translating in the office? And so we talked a little bit about that, how the FBI handles its language requirements and the need for people with those skills. And I learned that we have one linguist in Anchorage mm-hmm. who speaks Russian, but basically you can call upon this whole network in the FBI for any languages that you need.
Correct. Again, as a agent, that is one way to help you get in the Bureau to be able to speak a language. And it's going to help you more if that's a specialty language, such mm-hmm. as Chinese, Russian, Urdu, Arabic, something that the Bureau needs. But if you want to get in non-agent, we have, exactly like you said, we have a cadre of linguists that work for the FBI. And they do a host of what you did described. Oftentimes, they're listening to tapes. They're transcribing those. They may be sitting in interviews with an agent, you know, translating that interview, mm-hmm. and they may be listening on court-authorized monitoring.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry, that's the music, that's the sign. Our hour is up. I told you it was going to go fast, and it does. So thank you very much. I want to thank Judge Elaine Andrews for being co-host, Marlon Ritzman, Special Agent in Charge of the Alaska Field Office, and our callers and listeners. Next week, Charles Walforth will be back as your host on Hometown Alaska. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Dave Waldron is our audio engineer. I'm Kathleen McCoy. Thanks for joining us today on Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.